It's time for the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. Stay tuned as we discuss local and national sports from Southeast Missouri and beyond. The Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle is brought to you by Royal Retros. If you like cool throwback jerseys of defunct sports teams, Royal Retros is the place to buy. If you go to royalretros.com and you order with the code SPORTSDESK, all one word, you can get a little bit off your order. So check out Royal Retros. And now on with the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. And we are back on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. I'm Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
And home of the first place LA Rams, this is Kyle Roberts.
And we have another full show today. We are going to talk football, and more football. And we're going to start off by doing a recap of last week's high school football games. Leading off, the Poplar Bluff Mules got a very nice and very dominating win over the Kennett Indians, I believe, to the tune of 34-8.
Yeah, good for the Mules. You know, they're showing some late season life. I don't think it's as dramatic as what we saw last season, but it's good to see that they're not going to sneak out of this year with only one win. And let's see if they can build on that momentum with this Friday's game as well.
Then they actually have a pretty good chance to do that. We're going to talk more about that in a bit, but I was a little surprised when I heard after last Friday night that Chaminade took on Hillsboro and absolutely whipped the Hillsboro Hawks, which bodes well for our chances against Hillsboro since we took Chaminade to the wire earlier this season.
Well, and also we have a pretty good record against Hillsboro. In fact, it was a road win against Hillsboro that really propelled the Mules last season to their first round playoff victory on the road against the Farmington Knights. So, yeah, it would be great to end the regular season on that high note, and I think they've got a good shot.
I do too, but we'll talk more about that in a bit. The next thing we're going to talk about, going back to this past Friday night, the Dexter Bearcats went up to Park Hills and got stunned by the host Rebels, blowing a 14-point lead and losing 22-21.
And, you know, to make matters even worse than that, the play that really lost them the game was a fourth down play in which Park Hills made a long pass. I mean, they were in their own territory, and they completed a long pass down to the Dexter 6-yard line. The one thing that we always have to remember is that these are kids. I mean, I know, you know, they're very large teenagers, but from my point of view at 57 years old, these are children.
They are
out there playing a game, and kids make mistakes. So this may actually turn out to be something good for Dexter. I don't think, especially with younger teams like high school teams, that it's good to go into the playoffs undefeated. That happened 2 years ago in girls basketball.
Yep.
With the Donovan Donettes, they had an undefeated season and then lost to Notre Dame in the playoffs. They came back last year with two or three losses on their schedule before the playoffs and went on to win the state championship. So if Coach Jamerson can use last week as a teaching tool rather than a stick with which to figuratively beat his players in practice this week, because it was an ugly loss, it was an unnecessary loss, but if they can learn from it, then I think that might actually be a good thing.
And that's a good point. And, you know, and I think that's what will happen. Even in spite of this loss, Dexter is still in great shape to be the number one seed in the district, which is really big. So it's one of those things that it's a blemish on the record, but in the long run, it may not hurt that much and could actually help.
Yeah, an interesting stat that I heard from the radio broadcast. Dexter was undefeated from the previous time that they had played Park Hills Central. Park Hills Central was the last team that had beaten them before they went on this undefeated in the regular season, I should say, obviously. But yeah, sometimes one team just has another team's number. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, well, throw out the statistics when these two teams play. Sometimes it's like that. And the fact that that it was a road game, I think, you know, it's always tough to win on the road, you know, unless you're like a monster program like Jackson, something like that.
Indeed.
Also from last Friday night, the Donovan Dons hosted the Granite City Warriors out of Metro East and got a really nice win over the Warriors, beating them 21-13. Yes, granted, the Warriors, this was their 31st straight loss, but Granite City is also a school that has three or four times the enrollment of Donovan. That's still a nice win. And here's a big thing. It gives the Dons their fourth win of the season, which is as many wins as the program had had at the varsity level since resurrecting in 2018 coming into this year. That's a pretty nice milestone. It's also Donovan's most wins since 1974.
Well, yeah, and it's a good platform to build on, and it also shows that their coaching staff has the program moving in the right direction. The key for that program in Donovan is, can they recruit more players out of their district, because they need more bodies on the field.
That is a big thing. Looking at some more games from last week, Saxony Lutheran beat Massac County. I think it was 42-28.
I called that one, if you'll remember, from last week.
That is correct. He did. Other games from last week, as I'm pulling up last week's schedule here on my phone, because I'm old and I need the reference to see it. Jackson got another gigantic win over Miller Career Academy. Nobody thought that wasn't going to happen.
There's no point in even paying attention to Jackson until the state Final Four. They're going to the Final Four.
Wait, yeah. I'm sorry. Who is Miller? What was it? Repeat that school again.
Miller Academy?
It's a St. Louis public school. And basically, here's the weird thing. The St. Louis public schools for football have basically co-opted where there's just two schools now. Miller's one because they've teamed up with Vachon, and Gateway STEM, who goes to Donovan Friday night, has teamed up with Sumner and Soldan. That is how much enrollment has dropped at the St. Louis public high schools.
Yeah, and this matchup Friday, Donovan against this huge St. Louis school, it's just ridiculous. I mean, you know they would have it makes about as much sense as scheduling a game against Jackson. I mean, you know, I'm sure that there has to be reasons, but you know, they're going up against an undefeated school, you know, with this huge population to draw from. It's really sort of an unfair mismatch.
I'll have a couple of thoughts on that when we get to our predictions for this week, because there are a couple of interesting things about that game. There's a little bit of history there. Also from last week, Malden lost at Veritas Christian 27-18. Veritas avenged a loss to the Green Wave from last year.
Well, a little bit of life from the Malden program. You know, they didn't give up 50-plus, and they didn't get shut out. So in the context of Malden's season this year, that is the arrow pointing in an up direction. You know, again, I'm digging pretty deep into that dark cloud to find a silver lining, but you know, with the kind of year that Malden is having, you have to find your hope wherever you can.
Indeed. Other games, Caruthersville got a win at Portageville.
Yeah, a surprisingly easy win. I thought Portageville would put up more than a fight, but I guess Caruthersville is just that much better of a team this season.
They're pretty good. You were at Charleston and East Prairie. Charleston won that game pretty easily.
Yeah, East Prairie. They scored a couple of touchdowns late. Again, I don't cover these teams often enough to know about the rosters, but they had a big enough lead. I imagine it was probably their 9th and 10th graders playing out on defense for the Blue Jays, which allowed East Prairie to score a couple of late touchdowns that absolutely did not matter. It was 34-0 in the fourth quarter. That game had been decided before they played that last 12 minutes.
Yeah, a bit of interesting trivia about Charleston. Charleston's starting quarterback is Chase Kirby. Chase's dad is Popper Bluff Mules legend Shane Kirby, who quarterbacked the Mules to the 10-0 season in 1990, and later coached the Mules to the Sweet 16 of football in 2009.
Yeah, Charleston, they got a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. So, you know, I like the team that they have. I like their chances going into the postseason as well.
Going around the horn on some games, Festus beat Farmington. Kelly beat Lutheran St. Charles. Hayti beat Alton Marquette. And a little bit of an interesting score, Cape Central rallied to beat Live for Life 17-16.
That was my most surprising result of the weekend because, you know, the way that Cape has lost some games at home this season, I really thought that Live for Life was going to come down and just walk away with an easy win. So give that Cape program credit for fighting hard and coming away with the W.
Yeah, that was a pretty nice win for Cape Central. Live for Life gets a lot of respect in the state polls, maybe a little more than they should this year. Live for Life, not too long before they played Cape Central, played over at Murfreesboro, Illinois, and came away with a 46-34 win, which Murfreesboro is a good program. But when I saw that Murphy had played Live for Life that close, I said, you know something, I think Cape has a chance to beat these guys. And my hunch ended up being right, which is kind of nice.
You know, I'm just going to say again, it is a ridiculous name for a school. It sounds like one of those 24-hour fitness centers, you know, Live for Life, you know. And it's like, we're open 24-7, you know. I'm going to have to... Just to satisfy my curiosity, I'm going to have to look into how they possibly came up with that name for a school.
That sounds completely made up.
Well, guys, that takes us into this week's games. Leading off, the Poplar Bluff Mules are closing out the regular season by hosting the Hillsboro Hawks. Like I said earlier, the Hawks are fresh off of a big loss to a Chaminade team that Poplar Bluff played to a touchdown. In fact, it was tied, I think, with a minute to go when Chaminade scored a touchdown late to get that win during week two. This game is at Poplar Bluff. I'm going to take the Mules in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to be positive for the home team. Yeah, let's pick the Mules to win their final game at home.
Dexter is going to Scott City Chaffee. I think Dexter is going to bounce back. Scott City is having a good year, but... I think Dexter is going to be fired up. I think Dexter is a little bit better than the Rams. I'm going to take Dexter in this one.
Yeah, it's a bounce back game. Jamerson is going to have that team foaming at the mouth, ready to play. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a big Dexter victory.
And as we talked about earlier, Gateway STEM is making the trip down Highway 67 to take on the Donovan Dons. There's an interesting story about that game. Originally, Donovan was going to play Soldan, you know, which is another St. Louis public high school, but because of low numbers, Soldan decided to co-op with Gateway this year, and that led to the Dons picking up Gateway. This is going to be an interesting game because Gateway is the number 9 team in Class 4 as of the last poll I saw. I will say that the Jaguars have benefited from playing a very weak schedule. However, they are arguably the best team that the Dons have played this year. I think Gateway's going to win this one.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's an undefeated Class 4 team from St. Louis. So, I mean, that's a fairly easy prediction. I don't think Donovan's going to win the game. I would like to see them... You know, at least keep it respectable. You know, not get blown out early, as has so often played. I really hope that Alex Jones is healthy and is able to start at quarterback. And I'd really like to see. You know, again, I'm just a guy who talks sports on the radio. I don't know anything about coaching teams. But I do know what I see, and what I've seen from the Donovan offense is that their running game doesn't really amount to much in terms of being able to gain yards, and I think a lot of that starts with their offensive line. You know, there's not really a big push. There's rarely holes open. I know a lot of times the offensive calls at Donovan are just three runs up the middle for no gain and then a punt. And then you see Alex Jones throwing the ball to Jacob Putman, and they're moving the ball down the field. So I, you know, as someone who watches sports, and I think if I were a resident or a parent or a fan there in Donovan, I would be like, what do you have to lose? Just start slinging it. You know, just start even if it's just short screen passes, you know, little bubble screens, get the ball into Putman's hands. And, you know, when their defense starts keying on him with double and triple teams, that's going to open up a couple of your other playmakers. There's another kid. He's a tall wide receiver. He's number 8, but I don't have the roster in front of me.
I saw him the other night. He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's really fast. And I apologize to everybody in Donovan, including number 8, because I can't remember your name. When you're going up, when it's a David and Goliath situation, you got nothing to lose. You know, pull out all the stops. You know, bring out all of your trick plays, your fake punch, your flea flickers. You know, whatever it takes, leave it all out on the field. And you know, regardless of what the final score is, you know, as long as you give it your best, you know, you can hold your head high and be proud of your effort. And they should be proud. You know, 4 wins for a program that was reduced to junior varsity last season is a great accomplishment. Everyone there should be super proud of that team.
And I think the future in Donovan is looking pretty good. They should have a pretty good amount of these kids back next year. Nathan Hampton has done a great job leading this program. I mean, like I said, this is the most varsity wins the Dons have had since 1974. I was in diapers back then, guys. Mark was in first grade, I believe.
Yes. I will say this. Alex Jones is just a sophomore this year. So, you know, assuming that he comes back, they're going to have a starting quarterback for the next 2 years. And, you know, at every level of football, you know, that what having a skilled quarterback is key. And I think that Alex is just going to continue to develop as he gets older, as he gets stronger. You know, I think he's got a really good future ahead of him.
I do, too. Malden is going to wrap up the regular season by going to Hayti. Hayti, I believe, is healthy now. They have been playing a lot better. They're going to have an easy time in this game.
Yeah, I agree with that. And let me just take a step back. I looked up the roster, and I'm talking about Jack Wellington. Yep. Is number 8 for Donovan.
He had a touchdown the other night.
Yeah. So, anyway, sorry. Continue.
You're good. No, like I said, there's not a lot to say. Hayti is a very clear favorite against Malden. Hayti should have some nice momentum going to the postseason. And I actually think that Malden and Hayti will end up matching up in the first round of the districts the following week back at Hayti. So this is going to be like part one, and then next week is going to be part two.
Yeah, and Hayti is obviously going to be favored in both of those games.
Of course. Other games, Cape Central is going to Kennett. I'm going to take the Tigers to win this one. I think, you know, they're coming off a nice win. They beat a Popper Bluff team that had very little problems with Kennett. I think Cape's a clear favorite in this one.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Jackson is hosting Class 4 state-ranked Festus. The Tigers are a great team. They just beat Farmington. But I don't think, even though Festus is a state title contender in Class 4, they don't have the horses to do a lot against Class 6 Jackson. I think the Indians win this one pretty easily.
Jackson swatted Farmington like a fly. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, when we talked about that game a few weeks ago, Farmington was looking really strong, and I thought, man, they're really going to put up a fight against Jackson. And boy, did they not. I mean, it was just a track meet for the Indians. So, you know, yeah, Festus is a strong team, but again, it would the least surprising result of this season in Missouri high school football would be a state championship by the Jackson Indians. So, you know, you got to go with Jackson until somebody beats them. And I'm not sure who that is. It's certainly no one from Southeast Missouri.
The CBC cadets out of St. Louis are going to have a lot to say about that. That is going to probably be Jackson's state quarterfinal opponent. They are the number one team in the state. They may or may not be ranked in USA Today. I would have to look. But that is Jackson's quarterfinal opponent. If Jackson can get past CBC, then the Indians have a pretty good chance of winning state. But that is going to be a very, very tall task. That is like going to be a Manute Bowl tall task.
I'll tell you what, if we had nothing else going on, if that game happens the way you talk about, that would be a good excuse for a road trip, and we'll just cover our own media. We'll just like get media passes, you know, as the Sports Desk podcast. You just leave all the rest of the traditional media behind.
Hey, that may be something to keep in mind. That game may be at Jackson if it happens, but I'd have to double check that.
Well, that would make it even, you know, a trip to Jackson is a lot easier than a trip to St. Louis.
More games this week. Charleston is going to Sikeston, renewing the Highway 60 rivalry. I'm going to take Sikeston this one there, not only because they're coming off a nice win against New Madrid County Central. Charleston's having a good year, but Charleston is a Class 1 school. Sikeston is a Class 4 school. I think Sikeston pulls this one out.
Are you certain about Charleston being a Class 1
yes.
school?
Yes, wow. They are Class 1.
Okay. I don't care. Bluff beat Sikeston earlier this year. I'm taking the Blue Jays. I think the Blue Jays are going to beat the Bulldogs.
Crothersville's going to St. Genevieve. That's going to be an interesting game. You got Class 2 Crothersville against a tradition-rich Class 3 St. Genevieve team. But I think the Tigers are going to go up to St. Genevieve and slay the Dragons.
Yeah, Caruthersville's a really powerful team this year. It's the Tigers.
Interesting matchup. The Kelly Hawks are hosting Deer Creek Mackinac out of the Peoria area. I don't know a lot about Deer Creek Mackinac. They are 5-3. They, I believe, are a 2A school or in that ballpark in Illinois. I'm going to take them to win this one, but this one could go either way because I don't know much about their Kelly's opponents.
Yeah. I tell you what, I don't really understand the way that these games are scheduled. You know, that why? I mean, I can understand at the very beginning of the season, you get a lot of boot heel teams who are playing Arkansas teams, you know, because they're geographically close by. But the fact that we're playing these teams from Illinois in the St. Louis metro area so late in the season is a bit baffling to me.
In the case of Donovan and Saxony Lutheran, it's probably because both of those schools are independent schools and not in a conference. Kelly, I'm not sure why, but speaking of, you know, games, you know, games between two teams on each side of the Mississippi, Saxony Lutheran wraps up its first varsity regular season by hosting Redbud, Illinois. The Musketeers, I think, have wrapped up their conference schedule. Saxony, being a first-season varsity team, needed to get a few different teams. That's why they played Massac County last week. That's why they're playing Redbud this week. Redbud is a sub-500 team. I'm going to take Saxony Lutheran to win this one.
Well, I picked Saxony last week, so I'm going to stay with the hot hand and let it roll and go with the Crusaders.
East Prairie is making the trip to Fredericktown. Fredericktown is coming off its first win of the season, a battle of 2-1-7 teams. I'm going to take the home team in this one.
Just to be contrarian, and just because I was there. And so, by the way, compliments to East Prairie on their facilities. Nicest press box I've been in all season. They had Wi-Fi available for media. Their artificial turf is like a luxury carpet in a five-star hotel. Really, really impressive facilities out there in East Prairie. So let's just go ahead and go with the Eagles to get their second win of the season. How about that?
Cool deal. Park Hill Central is going to Farmington. I know Park Hill Central is riding high after last week, but Farmington's pretty good. I'm going to take the host Knights in this one.
Yeah, that is a letdown game for the Rebels for sure, and Farmington's just a better team than they are, so it's the Knights.
And our last two area games are both in Perryville. Perryville is hosting Cuba. This Cuba team is not very good. I think they actually had to forfeit a game earlier this year, possibly because of low numbers. I'm going to take the Pirates at home to win this one.
Sure, why not?
Last but not least, St. Vincent is hosting Jefferson High School out of Festus. That one could be interesting, but St. Vincent is at home, I'm going to take the home team.
Yep, me too. Hey, I want to say one more thing to our listeners over in Donovan. I pulled up the matchup, and I'm taking a look at Gateway.
A lot of big wins, but in fact, I don't think Gateway has played a team with a winning record.
They have not. Donovan has more wins at sitting at 4-4 than any other team that Gateway has played. Here are some of the records they've played against: 1-7, 1-8, 2-6, 3-6, 3-5, 1-7. 0-8, that was a forfeit, and then Madison, Illinois, 1-7. So, you know, this is the first time they've played a team with four wins this season. So, I still think Gateway's probably going to win that game, but you know, let's not count the Dons out before the opening kick.
Agreed. And Mark, I believe you're heading to that game Friday.
Yep. I will be covering it for cmoball.com along with the DAR and with the Donovan Prospect News. And I will be happy to see the Dons fans and their team and coaches and everybody. I've been covering Donovan on behalf of our local news media for a few years now. I've gotten to know a lot of the folks out there, and I'm always glad to be over in Ripley County, and just wish everyone out there best of luck this weekend.
Indeed, and it's, you know, going to be a nice finish to the regular season, and that's going to finish our high school football segment here on the Sports Desk. When we come back, we're going to talk a lot about the National Football League here on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
This is Three Rivers College women's basketball coach Alex Wiggs, and you are listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
And we are back on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle, and we are going to dive into the National Football League. I'm going to lead off by talking about the Tennessee Titans. We played our first game under interim head coach Mike McCoy. The good news is we had our moments. We led most of the first half, but we had about an 8-minute segment in the third quarter where we looked absolutely horrible, gave up a touchdown drive to the Patriots to lead off the second half, and then right after we got the ball back, Cam Ward had an ugly, ugly fumble that was turned into a scoop and score that broke the game open for the Jets. I mean, not the Jets, the Patriots. And the Patriots won 31-13. Like I said, though, we did not look near as horrible as I thought we would. A lot of people, I think, like me, figured the Patriots were going to come in and do something like winning 48-10. I mean, we were having visions of what happened in Foxborough in 2009 when the Patriots beat us 59-0. I really thought we might have a repeat of that. We didn't. We have a long way to go. Unfortunately, our last two games before the bye are we are playing the Colts in Indy. That could be very ugly too. And then we close out our stretch before the bye by hosting the San Diego Chargers. We can talk more about that game next week. But
The thing that would make me most angry as a Titans fan is that you used to have Mike Vrabel as your head coach, and the owner, for reasons that pass understanding, fired him. It's like part of the problem with this league is that owners are way too quick to fire the leads of their organizations. And you can't, I mean, and I'm speaking to myself and all the rest of the Vikings fans, okay? The worst thing that could happen for the Vikings franchise is to listen to the fans and fire Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, fire Kevin O'Connell, just get him out of there. I mean, it's like it would set the franchise back another 10 years to start over in the midst of the system that they have going. And frankly, you guys just overreacted when you let Vrabel go. It's like, yeah, it was disappointing that that he couldn't get over the top, that he couldn't get past the Chiefs. But, I mean, please show me a team other than Philadelphia that has gotten past the Chiefs in the past 4 years.
Literally, and there's no shame in losing to Kansas City in the playoffs. And, Mike, I'll ask you this. At the time when the Titans fired Mike Vrabel, this was a case of them thinking that the grass was greener on the other side. Did you genuinely believe that there were more better viable coaching options at that time?
I'm not really sure.
Well, it wasn't Brian Callahan. Well, we know that for sure.
Bada boom, bada bing, y'all. Mark just nailed that one right there, because whether or not, you know, the one reason that I will say getting rid of Mike Vrabel was not the biggest mistake the franchise made is because hiring Brian Callahan as his replacement was.
So you're just compounding error with error. And when you see something like this, that means that there's something dysfunctional higher than the head coach level. And until you get that fixed, it doesn't matter who you hire.
That would be team owner Amy Adams Strunk, who is very unpopular in Nashville. I'm hoping that we can get a little bit of stability, but we will see. My fear is that the Titans are on our way to being what the Washington now Commanders are, were under Dan Snyder.
Well, I mean, she would have to be, a much more horrible excuse for a human being to approach Dan Snyder levels. So
that's true too. We can take solace in that.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't get that far. Let's wait and see who the Titans hire as the new head coach before. I don't think it's going to be McCoy. I don't think there's going to be any reason. You know, the only reason that he was moved up is they had the sense to realize it's like, okay, we're not going to bring in an entirely new system in the middle of the season while we're trying to develop a rookie quarterback who has skills, who shows flashes. But the fact of the matter is rookie quarterbacks screw up. Exhibit A, Jackson Dart. who threw a terrible interception to lose a game that they should have won against Denver. But that is the pick your own adventure that you get with a rookie quarterback. It's going to be a wild ride.
And Mark, we've talked about this some too. People forget, Hall of Fame quarterbacks, how much they struggled as rookies. Peyton Manning threw 28 interceptions his rookie year. People forget that. Troy Aikman.
Troy Aikman went 0-11 his rookie year.
Oh, that's not even all. Troy Aikman threw 18 picks, 9 touchdowns, and had a completion percentage of less than 53%. He looked dog awful, and he did not look that much better his second year, even though the Cowboys were 7-7 in his starts. It took Aikman until his third year before he began to really look good under center.
Yeah, my friends up at Purple Daily had a really good idea. They said that what we're seeing is that the model for having a successful franchise quarterback is not drafting and developing them, because the fan bases and, in fact, the league owners just don't have the patience for that sort of thing. That what you want is the Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold model, where you take a quarterback who has underachieved in the league for about 5 or 6 years. You put him into an advantageous program that ideally utilizes the skills that he has, and then you use the cost savings and only paying a quarterback 20, 25, 30 million as opposed to 50 or 60 million, and then you use the rest of that money to build an excellent roster around them. And we're seeing that pay dividends in Tampa, in Seattle, because J.J. McCarthy may actually turn out to be a franchise quarterback, but I suspect unless he balls out the rest of this season, or maybe he just plays, B-minus, C-plus, and they bring him back for next year, and then he balls out in his second year of starting. If that doesn't happen, what we're probably going to see is the Sam Darnold model, where it's like, sorry, kid, it just didn't work out. And he bounces around the league for a couple of years until he's 26 or 27 years old and all the brain cells and all the physical maturity kicks in. And then he's just stomping the league up one side and down the other. And then the Vikings get to once again say, well, that could have been us, but we weren't smart enough to stick with it.
Yeah, that's often how it goes. Speaking of the Vikings, your guys had their moments, but ended up losing by a touchdown to the Eagles on Sunday. You know, I know that was a loss you were very frustrated about, Mark. I will let you go from there.
Carson Wentz has to get back on the bench. I mean, as soon as possible. He's going to start Thursday, and he's going to be the reason why they lose out in L.A. to the Chargers. He's going to throw a bad pick, probably for a touchdown return. He's going to fail to hit wide-open receivers in the red zone. They're going to have to settle for field goals when they should have wanted for touchdowns. Let's throw in a terrible call for the referees that reverses a touchdown that was clearly a touchdown catch by T.J. Hockenson. I mean, there's, you know, how is the defense going to screw things up for the Vikings this week? Are they going to let the Chargers run up and down the field with them, gashing them for 15 or 20 yards to run? Or are they more likely going to let Justin Herbert throw for 375 yards against them? Again, it's pick your own adventure, except the adventure always ends in a Vikings loss. And this is my hot take as a Vikings fan. Unless JJ comes back and plays at the very least above average football, I think it's very unlikely that the Vikings win another game this season.
I think that's a little bit too pessimistic.
Show me the win on the schedule. I mean, let's say JJ comes back and he's not much better than Carson Wentz. Where is the win on the schedule?
I'm not looking at it right now, but I looked at it earlier. You guys are not going to lose out. I mean, if you were the Tennessee Titans, yeah, I would say you might, but you're not. It's not going to happen. Although you guys do have a tough opponent tomorrow,
okay. At Detroit, loss. Now, at home against Baltimore, that's a winnable game unless Lamar comes back.
Well, even if Lamar comes back, you should still win that game. The Ravens, or as we Titans fans used to call them, the Ratbirds, are horrible this year.
Chicago's playing better. In fact, we're looking up at Chicago in the standings. That's not a guarantee. And then at Green Bay, at Seattle, okay, maybe versus Washington. Washington doesn't look that good. But at Dallas and at the Giants, both of those look like easy wins at the beginning of the schedule. Now, Dallas's offense is virtually unstoppable. New York is frisky again. And then we close out the season versus Detroit and Green Bay. So, okay, I'll be as optimistic as I can and say, okay, maybe we get two or three more wins, but that's still only going to be a 5 or 6 win season for the Vikes.
That could happen, but we will see. You know, and McCarthy may surprise you when he comes back. I mean, you never know.
Yeah, that's what I'm hopeful for. But you know, the best quote from the classic Apple TV series Ted Lasso: "It's the hope that kills you," and there's nothing worse for Vikings fans than hope.
Oh, yeah, I feel what you're saying.
Kyle, that's deep.
Kyle, your Rams are coming off a huge win over in jolly old England as they dominated a really good Jacksonville Jaguars team.
I couldn't be happier to be wrong. As you remember last week, I did actually pick us to lose, and I hope my mother doesn't hear this because she will knock me sideways. Boy, don't you ever pick against us. Ride or die. Yes, ma'am. I digress. We did that without Puka Nacua.
Yeah.
Without him. And Devontae Adams, as I posted, I said, so he's washed, right? Devontae Adams is washed in big 2025. Man caught 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Looked fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been big on the Baker Mayfield for MVP bandwagon, but allow me to read these numbers for you right now. If a quarterback through 7 games has a QBR of 66 and a 109.3 quarterback rating with 17 touchdowns to 2 interceptions through 7 games, does that sound like an MVP to you?
Well, of course, Matthew Stafford is an MVP caliber quarterback. We all knew that. But the key to the Rams' victories this season have been your offensive line and running game, because the way that you're going to win is by keeping Stafford upright.
Exactly.
Not only that, but and it's funny you say that because we're actually 21st in rushing and 21st in rushing touchdowns, but we've only allowed 11 sacks. What's kept us in games is the fact that we've allowed the second fewest offensive plays on defense this year, and we're second in points allowed per game.
Well,
we have a bunch of quiet assassins on that defense.
Yeah, but get this, your point differential is plus 58, which is second in the NFC behind Detroit, not far behind Detroit. Their point differential is a plus 64, and a lot of that was padded by their blowout win in week 2 or 3, whenever it was, against the Bears. So that point differential is really impressive on the part of the Rams.
So my question is, when are people going to start talking about the Los Angeles Rams possibly at this juncture as the best team in the NFL? I'll wait.
I think we should
be in the conversation.
Yeah, should they be in the conversation? Maybe now, if your conversation is best team in the NFC,
yes.
You know, along that's a conversation that we can have. I think Detroit is head and shoulders above the rest of the teams in the conference.
I would
put the Rams and the Bucks. I would probably put two or three, and you can flip-flop them from week to week. I do think the Rams in the end are going to be better than the Seahawks. I don't think that the 49ers can keep winning games with their walking wounded roster. I think eventually those injuries are going to catch up to them. I think they're really winning with Christian McCaffrey being an absolute monster out there. And I don't know if any of you saw his game Sunday night against the Atlanta Falcons, but I mean, he looked like Christian McCaffrey from 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, it's just he was running through that Atlanta defense like they were standing still, and if somebody got in front of him, he just knocked him right on his butt. I mean, it was really, really impressive. The bad thing about that, if you're a Niners fan, is that McCaffrey's going to break eventually if he keeps trying to run like that. So, yeah.
Isn't it ironic that he, of all the players on the 49ers, he's the one that's not injured?
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, it really is. So, yeah, and if you're talking NFC, I'm going to go, let's say, Lions, Rams, Bucks as the top three. But if we're looking at the AFC, I mean, obviously it's the Chiefs, right? We're talking about a Chiefs team that's not even leading their division. They're a game behind the Broncos and tied with the Chargers.
Beat an absolutely awful Raiders team,
right? But the Chiefs look like the Chiefs again. I mean, it's like, you know. By the way, if you're talking about point differential, you know, plus 62, and that is and that's second in the AFC behind the Colts. So yeah, in the AFC, I'm saying Chiefs. I'm still putting the Chiefs ahead of the Colts. Until the Colts go into Arrowhead and beat them, the Colts are going to be in second place. And based on the record, I have to put the Patriots third in the AFC. You know,
it would have been very, very impressive. And Drake May looks like a dude. God.
Well, yeah, Purple Daily was talking in their podcast yesterday about, you know, in retrospect, looking back at that draft, should the Vikings have given the Patriots everything they asked for in order to move up and take that pick and take Drake May? And obviously, hindsight being 2020, sure. It's like, how many first draft picks do you want for us to get a quarterback for the next 15 years?
By the way, bit of trivia. The Indianapolis Colts are going to Arrowhead the Sunday before Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's going to be so much fun to watch.
Oh, that is going to be legend. Wait for it. Dairy.
Yeah.
Legendary.
Yeah. Another of my favorite podcasts, and I urge you, if you like to listen to football podcasts, to look for the O-Line Committee. I think it's the best football podcast out there right now. But I was listening to yesterday's show, and they were saying, you know, what's really scary about the Chiefs is that Pat Mahomes got all of his weapons back, and now he's angry at the rest of the league. It's like, okay, now it's time to show you. And so they're going to be running up scores for the rest of the season.
You know what helps the Chiefs right now? As it stands right now, they have the fifth easiest schedule in the league.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
It really is, but it really is schedule. I was texting you guys this over the weekend after my frustration at the Vikings loss. It's like, you know, the Vikings aren't going to go to the playoffs this season. It's very unlikely. I mean, they would have JJ would have to just come back and ball out and in a way, you know, that we hoped we would see him play and that he showed flashes of in the preseason and in training camp, but that we haven't seen in the regular season. And yes, it is still a possibility, but even if he does, this is his first year playing quarterback, so he's going to make first year mistakes. That is inevitable. But let's throw all that away. Let's just assume that the Vikings don't make the playoffs. I want them to finish with no more than 4 or 5 wins. I want another top 10 draft pick. Now, we're not going to use a top 10 pick on a center, but my God, do we need it on a shutdown cornerback. The Vikings said A.J. Brown did whatever he wanted against the Vikings secondary last Sunday, as did Davante Adams. We have got to get stronger on the secondary. You know, it's the players we have, Isaiah Rodgers, and Byron Murphy Jr., I mean, they are good players, but when you're putting them up against that type of caliber receiver, that number one receiver who can just, someone like Justin Jefferson, who can always get open no matter what, you know, we have to find our Sauce Gardner. You know, we have to find our Patrick Surtain. It's an absolute imperative, you know, so I think it's going to be better for the Vikings not to win too many more games this season so that we can take a high draft pick to really fill these glaring holes on our team.
It's going to be interesting. We're going to do our lightning round real quick and just do our quick football picks for this week. I am going to take the Los Angeles Chargers over the Minnesota Vikings. Mark and Kyle, who do you have winning that game?
I'm not picking your guys. I'm not picking the Vikings to win another game this season. I told you that was my hot take. It's like until they win a game, I don't believe they're going to win a game.
Well, I mean, even with the Chargers, all the injuries they have in the backfield and at both tackles, I'm still going to take them to win.
I am going to take the Atlanta Falcons at home over the Miami Dolphins, the hapless Miami Dolphins.
The Dolphins are an absolute tire fire. It's so bad they're not even bothering to fire Mike McDaniel. They're just like, oh, what the hell, do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. I think they may actually be literally tanking. You know, just let's let this end as badly as possible. So, you know, they know that Tua is washed, and it's like maybe we can get our number one quarterback in here. I don't know what they're going to do with Tua's contract other than eat it.
They're going to have no choice at this point.
Yeah.
Atlanta is an impressive young football team. And Michael Penix, Bijan Robinson, who when you isolate individual running back talent in the NFL, I believe he is the single most talented running back in all of football. And Drake London never gets enough love as the best possession receiver, and dude is probably going to wind up being like Larry Fitzgerald, more catches than drop or more tackles than drops in his career.
I know, but
they're going to win big.
Well, I mean, we say that they are, but they've been so bipolar this year. You know, they dominate the Vikings, and then they go and get shut out by the Panthers. You know, explain that.
Also beating and dominating the Buffalo Bills. Atlanta's main Achilles heel this year has been their field goal kicking, because they're going into last week they were number two in total offense in the NFL, but they were 20th in points per game because of their field goal kicking.
Well, you solve that problem by scoring touchdowns, and when you got Bijan Robinson, once you get in the red zone, just feed Bijan and let him run.
Literally,
it's going to be interesting. Hopping right along, I am taking the Bengals at home against the Jets. The Bengals have found new life under Joe Flacco.
Yeah, the Jets lose again.
The winner of the Icy Hot Bowl. And, did you say they were playing the New York Jets?
Yes.
Excuse me. Here on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle, I'm going to announce an unofficial Jackass of the Week award winner is Jets owner Woody Johnson, if I may. Quoted this week, he buried his quarterback, Justin Fields, but stood behind winless head coach Aaron Glenn and said, quote, "It looks like Glenn is turning around part of it." As, by the way, Fields has been benched. Tyrod Taylor will start against the Bengals. And he said, "It's hard when you have a quarterback with the rating that we've got. He has the ability, but something is not jibing. If you look at any head coach with a quarterback like that, you are going to see similar results across the league. You have to play consistently at that position, and that's what we're going to try to do for the remainder of the season." Need I remind you, Woody Johnson bought the Jets in the year January of 2000. Do you know what happened in January of 2000 with the New York Jets? They hired Bill Belichick as their head coach. Do you know what Bill did the next day? He quit.
Yep, that's right.
Yes, the Jets are the franchise that is most like the Washington football team, in that the only thing that is going to turn that ship around is for Woody Johnson to sell the team to somebody who's actually interested in winning. He needs to look in the mirror when he's talking, because he's the one who signs Justin Fields' checks. And there's nothing that happened over the time that Fields was in Chicago that would make you believe that he could actually succeed as a starting quarterback.
Yeah, that's Woody Johnson.
But let me ask you guys this real quick. If you think about a guy like Justin Fields and the teams he's played for and have started for, when have you known the Jets or Bears to be able to develop quarterbacks?
Exactly.
Well, but he was in Pittsburgh last year. Now Pittsburgh's not known as quarterback development, but you know, I trust Mike Tomlin's judgment in terms of football talent, and he did not see any reason to keep Fields on the team. In fact, he benched him for Russell Wilson last season. We all know how cooked Russ is. So,
good point, but good Lord, the winner of the Icy Hot Bowl, the Bengals last week, are gonna steamroll. And look at Joe. He found a very simple formula. Throw it to Ja'Marr Chase as much as humanly possible. You'd be amazed what happens.
Sounds like a plan.
We're going to hop right along. A lot of these games coming up are pretty easy ones. I'm just going to rattle them off real quick and let you guys come in. I am taking the Patriots over the Browns in Foxborough. Eagles at home over the Giants. The Bills to go into Carolina and win. The Panthers have been doing some good things, but this is the Buffalo Bills. I'm going to take the Bears on the road against the Ravens, and I'm going to take the Niners to go to Houston and win. In the rest of our afternoon games, the Buccaneers are I take them to win at New Orleans. I'm taking the Cowboys to win in Denver, and of course, I'm taking the Colts to win in Nashville. Guys, I'll let you give your thoughts on those games.
Yeah, I don't. The only thing I'm going to dispute, I'm down with New England. I think the Giants beat the Eagles again.
Interesting.
Ooh. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. The Vikings outgained the Eagles last week. They outgained them in yards. They had a longer time of possession. They ran more plays. The Vikings' problem is that their defense gave up big touchdown passes to Hurts and his receivers. Giants are not going to make that same mistake. I know the game is in Philly, but I think the Giants are going to win that. I also picked Chicago over Baltimore, San Francisco over Houston, Tampa over New Orleans, Indy over Tennessee. The really interesting game for me is Dallas at Denver.
Agreed.
I think that's the pick of your afternoon. Well, actually, it's going to be really hard to decide. Hopefully, let's see. Nah, they're both on CBS, so I'll have to watch the switchover coverage at the NFL Network, because those are both going to be, well, I mean, indeed, Tennessee won't be a good game unless you're a Colts fan, but Dallas and Dallas and Denver is going to be a really good matchup.
I think so too. Kyle, what are your thoughts on those games?
I'm in love with that Dallas-Denver matchup, and it's a clash because of Dallas' elite offense and very mediocre defense, and Denver's swarming pass rush to taking on Dak Prescott. And I just want to say real quick about last week's game. That Giants Broncos game was phenomenal, and what Denver did in that fourth quarter was something I don't think any of us may see for a long, long time. But I'm going to take Denver in a close game because I think too much pass rush is going to cause some issues with Dak trying to get the ball to CeeDee and George Pickens against that secondary. I like Denver in that one. Let's see. You know, the Giants are. You know what? I'm loving it. I'm loving Crash Out Cam Scadaboo. I'm loving Jackson Dart. Do they have all the firepower of the Philadelphia Eagles on paper? No, but they beat them the first time. I honestly think they sweep them. Did any of us have that on our bingo card this year?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But yeah, I mean, I don't think I could ever describe myself as a Giants fan. I mean, it's just, you know, I've got no connection there except for my undying love for Cam Scadaboo. You know, as long as he's still running through brick walls, you know, I'm going to pay attention to that team. Our Sunday night game is Green Bay at Pittsburgh. And I'm actually taking the Steelers. I think the Packers are frauds.
I'm starting to think so too.
I think their first 2 weeks was an illusion, and it's, you know, as much as I hate to say it, Aaron Rodgers is managing that offense very effectively. I think the Steelers defense has its way with Jordan Love, and the Steelers win a low scoring game, probably something like 17-14.
There's just something off about the Packers. Like, on paper, that's a good-looking football team. Obviously, the defense, like, you're looking at numbers. They're top 10 in points allowed and points for. They have a plus 33-point differential. But when you watch them play, something just they don't feel dominant. Now, the Steelers are annoying to watch, but they get the job done.
Yeah. Yeah, they are so working class, blue collar, lunch bucket. Just come to the field and do my job. You know what I mean? And that's what it looks like. It looks like they're doing a job. It's like watching someone work on an assembly line. It's not exciting, but it is effective.
Yeah. And they're such an anomaly. Pittsburgh, 25th in total offense. The Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, let me reiterate this: they are the 28th ranked total defense.
Yeah.
The Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah. Somehow this team's in first place.
Well, it's tribute to Mike Tomlin, who's never had a losing season. Now, our Monday night matchup, Washington Commanders go into Arrowhead to take on the Chiefs.
Chiefs, and I'm also taking Green Bay on Sunday night.
And it's disappointing that that Jaden Daniels is going to be hurt, because I think that this would be a really competitive game. I don't think Marcus Mariota has any chance of scoring enough points against that Chiefs defense. And my goodness, Chris Jones just looks like a man possessed out there. He literally cannot be stopped.
This game was supposed to be a marquee matchup at the start of the season, but again, no Jaden Daniels, no Deebo Samuel, no Terry McLaurin. Oh. I don't see Marcus Mariota pulling a 2017 and throwing a touchdown pass to himself again.
Yeah, I was about to say, who does he have to throw to? You know, unfortunately, for the Commanders, you know, the best parts of their offense are on injured reserve. Well, are on the injury list right now. Injured reserve means something specific, so forgive me for that. But yeah, the Chiefs have found the secret sauce. Whatever that secret sauce that they were missing last year, as they literally struggled their way into a Super Bowl loss. They don't look like a team that's struggling or scuffling at all. They look like a team that is absolutely at the top of their game.
Indeed, yeah. It's going to be an interesting slate of football. And before we go, I want to say you don't want to miss next week's show. It is going to be our Raiders and Lady Raiders Super Show. We will be joined by Lady Raiders head coach Alex Wiggs and hopefully by men's basketball head coach Robert Kirby. That's going to be a fun show next week. But on behalf, I am Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
And this is Kyle Roberts.
And you have been listening to The Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.